It's 8:15 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. The 2020 general session of the Utah Legislature starts on Monday. On the phone to discuss legislation and his expectations for the 45-day session, I have representative of District 54, Tim Quinn. Good morning, Tim.
Hi, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks so much. The big news of the week, of course, state leaders announcing that the legislature will fully repeal the new tax law by the end of next week, that after just approving it in special session in December. That's in response to the likely success of the citizen referendum. Are you surprised?
By which part? The referendum getting enough signatures or that we're going to repeal it?
Yeah, let's talk with the repeal first.
I think it's the only choice that leadership had, because with that referendum, the likelihood that it will pass makes us, we would be in a terrible situation for budgeting this year. We would almost have to have two different budgets, one with the repeal in place and one without the repeal in place, and that doesn't make any sense. So I think the only option was to repeal it.
Yeah. Did you sign the referendum?
I did not. I'm not a big fan of referendums, although I think, you know, I voted no on the bill itself and was a very outspoken critic of the bill.
Yeah. Does it show that perhaps the legislature should not have passed the bill to begin with in special session?
That could be argued. While the public was not in favor of that bill, it wasn't in favor of any tax reform bill. So to say that you should or shouldn't have passed it is debatable. But again, I think the process was bad. I think that putting sales tax on food was bad. I think we could have done a tax reform that would have been much, much more palatable for the public and actually accomplished what we wanted to accomplish in balancing our revenue stream.
Yeah. The governor says that this is to provide certainty for this year's budget, since he based his budget on numbers from the new tax law. But do you think it's fair to voters to repeal it before they could actually vote on it? Or you couldn't wait?
Well, I don't think we have an option to wait, because of the fact that we have to have a budget. We have to balance that budget, and that budget has to be in line with revenue numbers. And if we don't know where the revenue is coming from, that would make it a very difficult job to budget in a responsible way. So, again, I think that the only choice leadership has at this point is to repeal it.
Yeah. So does this now kind of suck the life out of the session? I mean, because now everything's going to be focused on having to come up with a budget. I mean, you kind of thought you had that work done in December, yeah.
Right. To say does it suck the life out of the session, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe the life needs to be sucked out of it. It allows us to take a step back and say, hey, what are the priorities of Utah? What are the priorities of the public? And how do we mesh those two and make sure that we do something that the majority of the citizens want in a very responsible way? And we still think, Leslie, I still think there's a way to give a tax cut to the people. One of the bills that I will run, I think the last 2 years, I've tried to restore that child exemption that the federal government took away. That would be an $80 million tax cut. I think we're going to try to do that. Whether it passes or not, because of the limbo we're in with the budgeting situation, I don't know. But maybe we need to have the life suck, out of the session for just a little bit.
Yeah. So to explain this child redemption tax cut for me.
The child exemption, back in December 2017, when the federal government did their tax reform, They doubled the standard deduction, but they took away child exemption credits. So we tried to restore that in 2018, and it didn't happen. We did, in a special session in 2018, do $30 million of it, which was just a very small way, I think about 20% of the way. We tried to have it in the tax reform bill that I ran in 2019 to include that. It didn't pass. It was included in this tax reform. But if we're going to repeal it, then that would do away with it. I'm going to try to run a standalone bill, to bring that exemption back so that working families making up to $70,000 of adjusted gross income with children would receive that reduction. Because right now, as of the federal tax reform of 2017, families who make $70,000 and less with children actually had a 200% tax increase from the state of Utah. And that just isn't right. We never should have kept that money. So this is an attempt to give it back.
The governor in his news conference said that he believes the legislature will push the pause button, not the reset button on this. Some constituents are wondering if the legislature will simply pass this bill again under a different name or pass multiple bills that accomplish the same thing. What's your sense of what's going to happen during this tax reform conversation?
I don't think so. And there may be several standalone bills that have components of that tax reform. But to say that we're going to restore the sales tax on food, I think there's no way in the world there's an appetite for that. Many of us didn't like that component anyway. Even some who voted for the reform didn't like that component. To say that we're going to have a standalone bill on the gas tax, I don't see that happening as well. I think the only thing we'll see, if we see much at all, in the standalone bills will be some sort of tax reduction bills, but no new revenue bills.
So what are you going to do about that? Because the whole basis for all of this, right?
Well, it wasn't new revenue, but it was where the revenue came from. You're right there. I think it makes us, and this is not a bad thing, I think it makes us have to tighten the belt around certain programs that were funded out of the general fund. That does not include education. But look at those programs in a very serious way and say, are these really something that we have to have right now until we do shore up that general fund revenue problem? Because there is one in the general fund, not in the education fund, but in the general fund, there is a revenue problem.
Representative Logan Wild, District 54, of course, telling us, well, that what that means is cutting services, because given that it's an election year, likely would see any kind of tax increases or even restoring some of the tax cuts that were offered to the richer population of the state. What's your sense? Certainly wouldn't see a tax increase, huh?
No, we're not going to see a tax increase. I don't think this legislature was interested in any tax increases anyway. But just because it's an election year, we have election years every 2 years. It doesn't mean that we just sit back every 50% of our time in the legislature and do nothing because it's an election year. But no, there won't be any tax increases, nor should there be. But I don't see that we restructure the whole tax system like we tried to do this year as well. I think we all know the governor. This is his last year. There'll be a new governor next year. And maybe that's the better time to start this conversation again. This would have a different governor.
Yeah. Are you going to endorse anyone for governor?
Not right now. Field's wide open. I think there's, six or seven candidates. Each of them have good points and good ideology, but we'll just see how the convention and primary system works.
All right. And so I guess I hear you saying tightening the belt. Logan Wild says cut services, basically the same thing, huh?
It could be, but keep in mind, Leslie, if we say cut services, that sounds pretty harsh. But I serve on what we call BEDL, Business Economic Development and Labor Appropriations Committee. We fund things that we probably shouldn't fund anyway. We fund an amusement park down on I-15. We fund parades in different cities and towns across the state. Those things are wonderful, but they ought to be either privately funded or funded from the community itself. And those are the things I think we need to take a serious look at. And we're going to be forced to take a serious look at because of this budget issue that we're going to be facing.
You mentioned earlier, of course, that you don't like citizen initiatives or referenda. You don't think it's a good way to legislate. With the high hurdle that the referendum supporters had to clear, the people seem to have a pretty clear mandate about this tax bill. So, I mean, what's the solution? I mean, do lawmakers need to start listening to the public? Or, I mean, or is it just that we're just going to have to start legislating, again, by referenda?
Well, I think there's two answers there. Yes, we do need to listen, and hopefully I have always listened. I mean, my district is very unique in the fact that Park City and Wasatch County have two very different political ideologies. But this referendum was different in the fact that this was just to repeal a bill. It wasn't to put a bill in place. One of the reasons I don't like initiatives is because it doesn't have the value of committee meetings where it's discussed and changed and amended over and over and over. 23 staff attorneys looking at it to make sure that it's constitutional, make sure that it doesn't conflict with other statutes on the book. So while this referendum didn't do that, I think it was more than appropriate to have, 152,000 signatures gathered to say, hey, let's put the brakes on this tax reform. That was an okay referendum. And I'll tip my hat to those organizations that started this. There was not much hope. When you talk to other legislators, there was not much hope for them gathering 116 signatures. They gathered 152 in roughly 35 days. was an all-volunteer force. They didn't pay a single, to my knowledge, they didn't pay a single dime to gather those signatures. That was impressive, and it speaks to the distaste of this tax reform bill.
At this point, we didn't see that you had any bills numbered or open. Do you have any protected bills out there? Or?
I do. I think I have four, and I think there'll be a fifth one. That will be all. They all are not numbered, and they are protected at this point. But I mentioned the other night at one of the events in Park City, one of the bills just deals with jury duty. Another bill aligns Utah state statutes as it relates to mortgage lenders more with the federal policy. As I mentioned, I may run a bill to restore the child exemption on tax reform that was taken away. So, yeah, there I've got four or five bills that will be running.
Do you plan on, I guess if tax reform isn't on the table this year, I mean, what are some of the issues you think will dominate general session?
Oh, that's a good question. We had an all-day caucus a few weeks ago in which some of those things were discussed, but a lot of it was around budgeting, and that budgeting question had to do with, you know, the tax reform bill being in place. So I don't know. I know there's a lot of mental health issues that Senator Representative Elison will be running. As always, there'll be the 100 education bills, which is a ridiculous number to run, but I think we'll still have to tinker a little bit with Medicaid. Transportation will be a big issue, but I will be grateful that this session does not include tax reform. Not to have a pun, but it was very taxing last year.
Okay. Hey, anything else you'd like to let us know about as you kind of prepare for the 45-day session?
Just, Leslie, that any of the listeners, if you ever have a question, a comment, a concern about legislation, or you want to know how I feel about a certain piece of legislation, please don't hesitate to reach out and email or call me. My numbers are all listed on the state website.
Okay. Hey, Tim, appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
You bet, Leslie. Have a great day.
That's State Representative Tim Quinn representing District 54, which includes Wasatch County and Park City Municipal. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:27. KPCW News Time now, 8:28. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the former director of the Kimball Arts Center, now director of the Susan Schwartz Gallery on Main Street. The gallery hasn't closed and has not been leased out during Sundance. Rather, it's showcasing a curated exhibit with some of the art and artists from Agnes Gunn's private collection. Robin Marouche joins me now in the studio to tell us what we can expect. Good morning.
Hi, Leslie. It's great to be back.
Yeah, well, first, you're still working for the gallery, even though you've made a move to New Orleans?
Yes, I go back and forth. So I'm still the director at Susan Schwartz Studios, and we are thrilled to present this week, in association with Auburn Pictures, an exhibition called Art and Social Justice, which is open to the public. And what this is a groundbreaking three-part exhibit featuring the work of beloved local artist, but internationally acclaimed artist, Susan Schwartz, and select women artists from the collection of Agnes Gund, and then a preview of artists from the Art for Justice Foundation Fund. And if you're not familiar with the story, Aggie, the documentary, mm-hmm. is going to premiere today, this afternoon here in Sundance. And it profiles the extraordinary life of Agnes Gund, who is with us at the festival. And she is a renowned art collector who donated over 1,000 paintings to MoMA. She's been president of MoMA. And she became very engaged in activism after watching Ava DuVernay's movie 13th about the 13th Amendment. And she has been working with uplifting minorities and women in New York and bringing art to public education there for many years. But this took it to a whole new level. She has biracial grandchildren, and she was so incensed by what she saw in 13th that after the weekend, she sold a beloved Liechtenstein painting from her own personal collection for $165 million. It's the only piece of art she's ever sold. The rest she's just donated. And she gave over $100 million to the Art for Justice Fund to create it, to help fight for criminal justice reform, which is so extraordinary. And this fund helps to support formerly incarcerated artists. They give them grants and a number of programs to help in that regard. So we have with us here this week some of the artists that are in the show. So that'll be exciting to have them here. But their work will be on preview through February 2nd.
Okay. And the gallery located on Upper Main Street there.
Right, 260 Main Street, right next to the Wasatch Brew Pub.
Yeah, so the film Agate, it sounds like it was made by her daughter?
Yes, Catherine Gund is the director, and she has such an intimate access to this astonishing woman. And it's really an intersection of art and film, and it's natural for Susan Swartz, who is a founder of Impact Partners, the documentary film producers who have produced hundreds of documentaries that highlight injustice and create social change. And so with Susan's art, her focus is environmental injustice, and she's trying to illuminate what's going on with the environment because she's had Lyme disease and mercury poisoning. So it is art and activism united through the show.
All right. So what's the connection then with the gallery? I mean, just the opportunity? I mean, how did this all come together?
Another Impact partner, Geraldine Dreyfuss, is an executive producer on Aggie, and she is very familiar with the work of Susan, and she's come around the world with us to many of Susan's solo shows around the world. And she put it together, and what an extraordinary opportunity for us. We're so honored to be able to have some of these artists in the studio with us, because some of them have never even premiered in Utah before. So I really do encourage people to come out and see the show while it's up. And if you do miss it after February 2nd, it's going to travel to Salt Lake City, and it will be on display at Modern West Gallery through March 7th. So you will have an opportunity to see it in Salt Lake.
Okay. So can you tell us a little bit about what's going to be on display?
Absolutely. So there's a curated selection of women artists from Agnes Gunn's collection. Cara Walker, Kiki Smith, and some incredible artists that have been in MoMA, some of the works that have been hanging in MoMA with us. And then Mark Bradford is a renowned artist in Los Angeles, and when he heard about Aggie's generosity, he donated a work called Life Size, and we have it in the show. And what it is a life-size police body camera. And he sold a series, and he raised $1 million for the Art for Justice Fund. And so we have his work, and then two of the formerly incarcerated artists. One is on a prison bed sheet, and they're just incredible, and they will be with us as well.
Wow. Okay, so this Art for Justice Fund, I mean, it sounds like it's well-funded, $100 million. And again, that money has just been handed out through grants?
Through grants and different programs that they're funding. But they're started a whole movement around Art for Justice, and so this is quite revolutionary.
All right. So, again, all of the art then is Aggie's private collection. So it was all shipped from her homes?
That's right. And then we borrowed some from the actual Art for Justice Fund artists as well.
Okay. Okay. Since it's a private collection, I mean, are the pieces then for sale?
No, the pieces are not for sale.
Okay.
And some of Susan Swartz's work is for sale, but we're holding some to go to Europe for shows that are coming up later this year. So you'll be able to see her work for the first time before it goes in museum shows in Germany and in Italy.
All right. Any screenings happening at the...
No.
I don't think you have the facility for that. But
no screenings, but please do come in. It is open to the public, and we would love to give you a tour of this incredible collection.
Okay.
The three-part exhibit.
So it's up now, and you said remaining open through...
Through Sunday, February the 2nd.
Okay, through the end of the festival.
Through the end of the festival. That's right.
Okay. All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I just want to give a shout out to Sundance, because without their programming, this kind of opportunity wouldn't be afforded to Utah to profile some of these artists and have the likes of Agnes Gund and the other artists that are here with us this week.
Yeah. I think you're still a board member then for the Kimball Art Center.
I'm on a committee with the Kimball, so still very involved with the new building.
Yeah. So how are things looking for that?
I just got here, so that'll be next week's agenda. Okay. But very exciting with all of the architects that we've been able to work with, and vision, and the future looks very bright for Park City and for Utah.
Yeah. And is it still in a fundraising mode then at this point?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. We will be for some time.
Good to see you, Robin.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thanks for coming in. That's Robin Marouche. KPCW News Time now, 8:44 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Sundance Film Festival kicked off last night, featuring a number of opening day films, including the documentary premiere of Miss Americana to Summertime in the next category, and others. In the studio with a look at this year's dramatic programming, I have Sundance programmer Charlie Sextro. Good morning.
Hello.
So you've had a look at how many films before paring down the program this year?
On the feature side, we had around 4,000. But then when you add in shorts, it's somewhere around like 12 or 13,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who has the final say, or is it really kind of a collective decision? I mean, is it Kim Yutani or is it John Cooper? Or?
No, we really have a design. Our programming kind of philosophy is we have a big group of people, about 12 of us, who pick the features. We have smaller teams with that have like a focus that kind of coal films up and kind of presents selects to the rest of the team. But then the entire, so I'm on the dramatic team, but the entire team gets a final say.
Okay.
So everyone can get anyone can get any film into the festival.
Okay. So is it safe to say that the films that we will see in this year's dramatic premiere category will make it to the big screen later this year?
I would hope so, but also the small screen. There's a whole there's a whole new world of streamers and everything. So the biggest deals of the festival recently have all been for projects that are ultimately ending up on streamers.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the Townie Tuesday screening for Summit County Locals, one that'll be playing at Jim Santee Auditorium on Tuesday night. Downhill looks like a fun one.
Yeah. Will Ferrell, Julia Louis-Dreyfus. It's a remake of a film that was nominated for an Oscar called Force Majeure, and it's about a family ski vacation where the father, an avalanche is coming, and played by Will Ferrell, the father freaks out and runs, kind of leaving his family. All is safe, but now you get the kind of reverberations of that incident through the rest of the trip.
So is it a dramatic film, or is it fun? I mean, is it a comedy? I mean, given that the two people that were in it, I'm like, oh, it's got to be lots
of definitely laughs. Funny, but there are some very real emotions being explored within it. And it really focuses more so on, compared to the original, it focuses more so on Julia's character and how she's dealing with this and her new kind of view of her husband.
All right, and then the documentary that'll be playing at Redstone Tuesday is Boys State. So we've talked a little bit about that with some other programmers. But, kind of looking at the competition films, I mean, any themes kind of stand out? I mean, we usually have kind of the coming of age, dysfunctional families, government conspiracy, anything?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say it's a coming of age kind of year. We definitely have a couple projects like that. I think it's a little bit more adult. And our more adult explorations of kind of life. A lot of films really exploring the female point of view with the female leads and kind of their kind of characters in the minds. But it really is, I think, the great thing about competitions here. It's a real range. Every film is a completely different experience from the other one.
Yeah. We'll be talking with one of the filmmakers on the... Chris grabbing the title here, Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always. Yeah, so a big kind of female topic there.
Yeah, for sure.
In terms of some of the other films that maybe stood out for you in the competition, and anything you wanted to kind of highlight?
Yeah. We have a lot of, like, to even show you kind of a range, we have a really fun comedy, like romantic comedy with Andy Samberg and Kristen Milioti. Called Palm Springs, and if you know Andy Samberg and his Lonely Island team that produced this, it's very much in their wheelhouse. Really offbeat, kind of absurdist at times. But then the completely other end of the spectrum, we have this film called Sylvie's Love, stars Tessa Thompson, and this is a 1950s jazz era, real throwback romance. Really old school, but compared to all those movies that you saw in the past, in the 50s, kind of throwback romances, these are two black leads. And it's just showing you from a completely different viewpoint the world, but it is just this pure romanticism and like romantic storyline.
Yeah, and one of them I noticed all shot in black and white.
Oh yeah, 40-year-old version. That is a fun movie, really, really fun. It's a playwright, in the real world playwright. Rod is the filmmaker, is the writer, director, and star of it. She plays a playwright in the film who kind of struggles as a playwright but starts to gain her voice through rapping. And it is an absolute, like, crowd pleaser, charmer. Really, really funny.
Okay. Let's see. I guess, and I don't know if other people like that, they actually, I always look at the pictures first.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like when you kind of see some of those, I mean, like, Shirley, I mean, it's like, I look at that and it's like, what is that about?
Yeah. Shirley's great. It's based on the writer Shirley Jackson. Elizabeth Moss, Michael Stuhlbarg's in it. And this is a really interesting kind of like psychological drama friendship about a young couple that move into a small town, and it's about like the kind of friendships that spring up between a young woman and Elizabeth Moss's character and her husband and Michael Stuhlbarg, and the kind of separate corners that they kind of go in. And yeah, really interesting psychological kind of story.
All right, and then let's kind of hit on some of the World Cinema Dramatic Competition films. Anything there stand out for you?
Yeah, if you're, I'm a big champion. If you're up to something quite dark, there is a film called Possessor. This comes from, if you know the filmmaker David Cronenberg, this comes from his son Brandon Cronenberg. And this is a really trippy sci-fi thriller. And it is really kind of visionary, exciting, but really kind of dark exploration. There's also a really interesting Iranian film called Yalda that is this thriller that plays out on like a live television show.
Yeah, this was the interesting one. This was the one that, I mean, there was some bad reporting done that saying that the film was going to be pulled out because of just the controversy with Iran. But basically, it was just the filmmaker, I think, that said that he was going to stay home
for
the festival. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a real, really kind of thrilling watch. And we have, I'm a big fan of that. It's, it's really kind of fascinating.
Interesting, right? Like you say, I mean, it's like some kind of, because something happened and it's like the family gets to decide the fate of their family member?
The idea is that it's a television show where family members are brought together and someone is supposed to forgive the other one. That's the design of the television show. But the woman at the heart of it, who's supposed to be forgiven, she kind of refuses it and starts opening up about the reality of what really happening. So it's like this ticking, clock as we're kind of like the show's playing on, and revelations are just kind of coming out. It's really, really kind of thrilling watch.
Okay, let's just hit on one of the premieres, of course, Downhill. That's going to be the Townie Tuesday.
Yeah. Got a lot of big ones.
So the Glorias, I mean, this is not in the documentary category?
Oh, no, it's a biopic of Gloria Steinem, and she played by three different actresses. The main ones you see are Julianne Moore and Alicia Vanderkam. Both Oscar winners.
Yeah, and isn't that, I mean, it's like you look at the picture and you're like, oh, that's Gloria, but when you look a little bit closer, oh, it's Julianne Moore.
Yeah. And it's directed by Julie Taymor, who did like the Frida Kahlo, Salma Hayek film in the past, and Across the Universe, so really kind of accomplished filmmaker. Another big one, I feel like the premieres section, I mean, we have a lot of big cast stuff in premieres, but one that I think is going to get a lot of heat is Ironbark. This is a Benedict Cumberbatch period thriller, kind of like a spy thriller. And it's Benedict and Rachel Brosnahan from Marvelous Miss Maisel in this really kind of like interesting, fun kind of spy thriller set in like Russia and the UK.
Okay,
Cold War.
And then kind of the long-awaited film from Ben Zeitlin was the one who had kind of just blew our minds when we saw her Beast of the Southern Wild back now.
Yep. And this is the follow-up. This is Windy. It's his Peter Pan adaptation. So it's basically if you saw Beast of the Southern Wild and you knew that kind of exciting, totally unique experience that film was, just imagine that, but now a Peter Pan story with children running off and going off to a lost world.
All right, let's. The next category always has some pleasant surprises.
It does.
Anything there that you wanted to highlight?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm gonna head off on a little bit to go introduce the world premiere of a film called Black Bear. It stars Aubrey Plaza, Christopher Abbott, and Sarah Gadon. And this is a really kind of, next, if you don't know it, is really kind of playful, really kind of boundary-pushing storytelling, really kind of unique experiences. And this is a really unique kind of psychological sexual thriller kind of changes its forms halfway through and becomes a completely different experience. And so it's just kind of fun to see where this movie is going to go and how it's going to play out. And then another really kind of fun one that I'm looking for. Or here, I'll mention a really sweet one, I Carry You With Me. And this follows two Mexican immigrants, true story of two different Mexican immigrants coming from Mexico, ending up in New York City, and their kind of love story over the years and kind of them getting back together. So I think that one, and has a nice little surprise at the end of it as well, that I think that one's really going to kind of charm audiences.
All right. And then in the spotlight category, this year, Sundance brings these back just because they were so great at some other film festival, but they've already kind of premiered somewhere else.
Yeah, so for the most part, we are world premiering movies. And so this is the section where we play films that played other festivals that we loved so much. We kind of considered them the best films from other festivals that we couldn't imagine not playing. We have some great ones. The Climb. We're actually doing a special screening of that, where it's screening in Sundance on Sunday, but we're also beaming out. It's going to be screening at, like, I think 11 different cinemas across the U.S., and the Q&A will be a live feed to those cinemas. And that film has played basically every major film festival in the world. It's a short film that originally premiered at Sundance, and it's an American film about two best friends. And it's hard to explain, but it is just this, like, kind of buddy comedy and the trials and tribulations and fighting of two guy best friends over a course of time. And yeah, the scenes take place over like a single shot, and the dynamics just keep going back and forth between every single scene. It's a really, really creative film.
All right. Any film in this year's lineup that you would consider kind of the most difficult to explain?
The most difficult to explain? Sure. Interesting. I would say, you know, I'm one of the big things I program is the midnight section, but there's a really, most of it is horror this year, except for one movie that's just this really fun kind of cult comedy. It's called The Nowhere Inn. And it stars the musician who, St. Vincent, Annie Clark, and then Carrie Brownstein from Portlandia and Sleater-Kinney fame. They're like best friends in real life. And so this is a concert documentary following St. Vincent, but so the concert performances are real, but their interactions and everything is basically Spinal Tap. So everything in between is this made up kind of mockumentary about Carrie Brownstein making a documentary about Annie, St. Vincent, and St. Vincent's not that entertaining. And so it's their struggles to make a good concert documentary.
You did a really good job explaining something that's kind of difficult.
Yeah. It's a weird, fun, kind of surreal movie.
Okay. So. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, it's a really fun year. I think it's a real fun year of kind of surprise. I think that's what you're really going to see in the things that kind of really pop up. They're going to come out of nowhere, and they're really going to kind of surprise people what they are and the experiences. So I'm glad movies are already out there, and they're going to keep coming. So.
Okay. Charlie, hey, thanks for spending some time with us. Appreciate your time.
Thanks so much.
KPCW News Time now, 8:57. It's the local news hour here on KPCW.